Recovery Sort Of is a podcast where we discuss recovery topics from the perspective of people living in long-term recovery. This podcast does not intend to represent the views of any particular group, organization, or fellowship. The attitudes expressed are solely the opinion of its contributors. Be advised, there may be strong language or topics of an adult nature.
Welcome back. It's Recovery Sort Of. I am Jason, a guy that makes no promises.
And I'm Billy. I'm a person in long-term recovery.
And we're talking about the AA promises today, something that I was not aware of early in recovery and then got introduced to later. And then when I first heard them, I'm like, oh, this is a nice little paragraph. It's kind of cool, right? It had a piece in there that I was like, ooh, I kind of like that one, right? Like, I wish our program said that one. You know, because I didn't want to give credit to AA at that point in my life for coming up with anything good, even though they came up with the whole program. But yeah, I was like, I don't know what these are. And then over time, I heard them a few more times and people talked about them and learned that at some point while they are in the book, I guess, as you were describing to me just before we started talking here, they've also become almost a 12-step reading to some extent.
Yeah, a reading that they pulled out.
Yeah, there's 12 promises. And, you know, I had talked about the promises with people in NA before who were aware of them and knew what they were. And, you know, I think the feeling I always got was that, they sound really nice and they've got some cool ideals in them. And we wish that Narcotics Anonymous had some cool version of the promises, which if you look deep enough, it sort of kind of does. Like if you read the 11th step, we just found out in the basic text, each paragraph starts not exactly with a promise. It doesn't say promise anywhere, but with an idea of a thing you'll be able to do that you weren't able to do before.
Yeah. And that's what it feels like. They've just taken the effort to look through this one section of reading out of the big book and pull out some of the results of living and practicing the program. And even when you look at their writing, it doesn't say we promise these things are going to happen. It tells you these are the results of living the spiritual program.
Right.
And we have a lot of those throughout our literature, just they're not as well organized,
right,
you know,
right.
They're scattered out and throughout paragraphs. So it would be a lot harder to pick out all the things we say will happen as a result of working the steps.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you mentioned, you know, we say we have one promise, right? Like the promise of freedom from active addiction, but it's actually a little more than that. It's a sentence that's a promise or, you know, what we say Narcotics Anonymous is capable of doing. And it says that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, which is three different separately distinct things. But, you know, that's kind of the promise of Narcotics Anonymous. Let's not say our. But the AA promises are interesting. I think what I wanted to explore, one, if you've never heard of them, they're kind of cool, kind of neat. It might give you an idea of what you can expect from working a program. But I really kind of wanted to go through them because I've always come at them from the sense of they feel very poetically nice. But I don't actually know that I've come at them is this real? Did I really get this? Or did I feel like the program could provide this, whether I got it or not? And I have no idea. So let's jump into that, unless you got more background you want to give on them. Or
no, I mean, other than, it comes out of, I guess, in the Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83 and 84, which I believe is chapter 6, which is in their 9th step, is where this comes out of. So I'm not exactly sure how it relates to the 9th step specifically, but that's where they come from.
Maybe it's hey, by the time you've gotten this far, these are some things you might see. And maybe they looked at, 10, 11, and 12 as much more of the maintenance steps, the way we call them today. And so that wasn't really a part of the change you were going to experience in your program. That was more like the upkeep.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. Damn, so this is actually like a 9-step program. And then you just got to do 10, 11, and 12 here and there. okay. The AA promises. Number one, and this is how the reading starts. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, which considering this is in the 9th step, I'm assuming it means after steps 1 through 9. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. So at step 4.5, we should have been amazed. Like, I don't know. Just literary wise, I don't actually know what that means. Like, does that mean we should have been amazed at step 4.5 or at some point in time during the process of doing the first nine?
I guess, is
or?
That considered one of the promises?
I think so.
Okay.
It's number one listed on mine. Mine's broken down.
Oh, so. See, yeah, mine just has the reading. Oh, okay. So it's not.
Yeah, mine's listed as the 12.
Yeah. Mine just has the reading and it's not broken out into individual ones.
I gotcha. So that's number one. But okay, so if you read that, that could mean I was amazed by step 4.5. That could mean I was amazed at some random point through working steps 1 through 9. That could mean, hey, it's still a 12-step process. So maybe somewhere around 6, you should have been feeling this, even though we're telling you at 9. Like, I don't even know what halfway through means.
Well, and what if we weren't painstaking enough?
Well, and if we're supposed to keep doing them over and over again, is it halfway through until I die? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Right. And how do you know if you've been painstaking enough in this phase of your development? So that's fascinating. In reading the actual book, if you skim through the paragraphs before and after, this promises only really seem to apply to step 9. They're like the step 9 promises. So I guess when you're halfway through making your amends, you should be amazed.
Yeah. And I don't know. My amends process, it took me a long time to get there, and it didn't feel great in the middle of it.
You weren't amazed halfway through?
No.
I got to be honest. Like, sometimes I just wish I wouldn't learn stuff. Like, I like these better when they were like these kind of poetic, pretty versions of things we might get from recovery. Like, they just sounded nice then, but now, maybe looking at them and realizing they're literally only written about step 9 and the step 9 process of making our amends and how that'll make us feel kind of cheapens them for me, and I don't like them anymore.
So it's just the chapter is into action.
Well, and if you read the paragraph or two before it and after it or skim it, like it's really just talking about the process of making the amends.
Yeah, and that's what in my research, they called them the 9th step promises.
Yeah, these are, so okay, if we're looking at that, these are only promises about the 9th step, I guess. And I did not know that. See, we learn something new every episode.
Yeah, but I think they're applied in general. They're applied to the whole process, at least the way that they're, I think, understood.
Well, I think somebody read them and thought, these are beautiful, and put them on a sheet of paper, and then they started being expounded to be about the whole process, but really, like, they were written about step 9, so that's interesting. Yeah, I don't like them anymore. Anyway. I don't remember feeling, I don't know, I might have been a little amazed. I would imagine going into 9, after having just written 8 with all these people I was like nervous about making apologies to, and I still had a lot of insecurity about whether people could like me. Like, I could picture me being pretty pumped that a couple of them went well.
I don't, like, say, I'm kind of thinking of the whole thing now, like you said, like, has it just applied to step 9?
I think that's what
I'm
they were
stuck
written
there
for
at the moment.
Well, okay. So picture it this way. Even if they were written about step 9, that doesn't mean they couldn't be about the whole process. I mean, because if this happened in the step 9 process, that took place during the process, and I'm sure some other steps led to it.
At least theoretically, we always say, and I believe, my belief is that the steps are written in order for a reason. We got to build our foundation off all those other steps before we can even get to this step. So it is about the whole process.
Yeah.
You know, there's a series of things. I don't know that we would have the same results if we just went and started making amends to people with 30 days clean.
Well, and that's where I guess I would argue these are probably sort of bullshit or, you know, just nice, gentle, beautiful ways of saying a thing. Because, like, okay, if you took some nice poetic words and described the act of stepping into the batter's box at a baseball game, right, with all the fans and in a big moment, like, there would probably be a cool way you could describe that somebody else could read and be like, oh my God, this is like the description of all of the process of playing baseball, or right, this is the description of like making Pop-Tarts in my backyard, or what the fuck ever. You know what I mean? Like, if you write it in a generalized enough way, it doesn't have to be about one thing. Like, it's kind of like people who write music, right? You listen to a song, everybody interprets it the
a
way they feel it, right? And I feel like, so it could be about the whole thing, but yeah, it's written about 9.
Yeah, and that's the way I mean, me personally, just about all the promises in general, it's like they're vague enough that, I mean, some of them have some specific things in there. They do talk about specifically financial stability or whatever words they use.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
We're going to get right up. Yeah. I know, that's a fun one. It's a fun one to argue.
Yeah.
So, all right, number two, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. So given my new understanding of the context of these in step nine, yes, there would be a new freedom in being able to go to family reunions that I couldn't go to because I felt awkward because I had stole that shit from my uncle, and you know what I mean?
Right, but I never made the amends. Peace with my past, and yeah, feeling like I'm okay with that, not carrying around the guilt and shame.
Right, right. So I would totally agree with that. On a broader scale, I think it still holds true. There's a new freedom to not feeling bound to having to use a substance to be okay at all given times.
Yeah. I mean, and there is something, you know, fulfilling spiritually about being like independent, like standing on my own two feet and taking responsibility for my actions and being accountable for the, you know, person that I am, like all those things, taking positive action in my life by addressing character defects, you know, like, there's like all those things build on a sense of happiness and well-being.
Right. I think if I had to argue a technicality, it would be the happiness part. Because I don't know, like, I could see where the conditions set by making amends could make someone happier, but I don't think those conditions cause someone to be happier. So I feel like that's not something we could promise.
Yeah, and it's probably not always going to be happiness in the moment. You know, some of those amends are difficult and some don't go perfectly, and the moments can be painful, but I think the result of the process.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking is sometimes what I've found historically, or at least what I feel like we're finding in the therapy world historically, is that we've looked at the absence of one thing as providing something else, right? Like the absence of danger means safety. That's not actually true. The absence of danger means there's no danger, right? It does not necessarily mean you feel safe there.
Right.
And this feels like one of those, like just because we're removing some places that have caused unhappiness does not necessarily mean happiness is going to be there. It's just removing things that get in the way of it, which is good. I'm not knocking it or saying it's a bad practice, but like, I don't think we can say, oh yeah, if you just remove all these obstacles to happiness, happiness will just arrive, because I feel like we understand now that's not always the case. Like some people are not going to feel happiness off of substances right away, at least.
Yeah.
So that one is kind of her. The next one, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I mean, I'm imagining in the context of step nine, that's because we're getting let off the hook to some extent. I don't think it's getting let off the hook, but we're owning our responsibility and we're taking a stand for our part to try to make things right.
Yeah. And seeing that our story, our whatever got us to where we are, doesn't have to be a sense of embarrassment and guilt, you know, that we can use that as like a positive, like, hey, this is where I was and these are the things that I was doing, and look now at my life now.
You know, we had Bruce on talking about his book recently, and just thinking through what he said, like this idea of there was a thing he had put in the book that he wished he wouldn't have at this point later on. But he said he didn't regret it because that doesn't do anything. And I'm like, but what's the difference? You know what I mean? Like if you still wish you would have done something different, isn't that regret? Like I feel like it is. And maybe there's a little different nuance to it, right? Maybe regret carries like a deeper emotional toll than just wishing you would have done something different. I could see that. So I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just like trying to think through, like, is there anything I could have done that even after making amends, I would still regret for the rest of my life, no matter what. And yeah, there's definitely things I feel like I would still regret. Like if I had seriously harmed someone to the point of taking their life or something in my active use, I would probably still hold a lot of regrets about that, whether I've made peace with it or not. I don't know that those are isolated properties.
You know what I mean? Like, you can have one without the other.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Even in the, I guess I can only share my experience with my past. That has been the case. I mean, I've felt like, you know, I don't regret my past anymore like I used to. Are there probably one or two things I wished I wouldn't have done? I would say, yeah, but as a total, like, story, I guess I don't regret it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I definitely think there's some things I would still regret. Nothing that I did, I don't think. Like, of course, there's a piece of me that says, man, it would have been nicer to have these other experiences that weren't like that, but... Yeah, that's what led me here, and I'm okay with that for the most part. But I guess I'm just picturing for people who might have it different than me. Like, I didn't do a whole lot of terrible things to individual people besides my parents. I mean, I put them through the ringer, but generally it was more stores that were catching the flack of my my destruction.
Right.
We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. I just don't know, man. Like, you know, comprehending the word serenity seems easy enough if you just go get the dictionary definition. It doesn't mean you have serenity just because you comprehend it.
Well, and I can say my experience in the process of at least the steps, I can't specifically say for the ninth step, but I have moments of serenity. I don't know that I walk around in a state of constant serenity. That's
right.
That's asking a lot. But... Well, I do experience times of serenity and peace.
I'm almost wondering if the wording isn't on purpose, right? Like, if you're talking about somebody who's coming from a place of not even being able to comprehend the word serenity, like can't even from their life experience as a somebody who's used substances uncontrollably, like just can't even fathom how serenity would look in their life.
Maybe, I feel like I was that. I mean, using. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Maybe even just the understanding of coming to a place where you're like, oh, I could see where people could find serenity. Yeah. Like maybe that's what they're trying to say.
My first moments of that understanding were being able to like lay down at night and go to bed and not have a million racing thoughts going in my head about how I needed to fix and what I needed to do and how I was going to deal with this and what problem, you know, needed to address next. Like just being able to lay down at night and be like, I am fucking okay. My life is okay. I'll deal with tomorrow. Like that was the very first idea of serenity that I knew.
That's pretty.
Thank you.
Do you feel like after the ninth step, you knew peace? I think that's a little lofty for a promise, personally.
Do I know peace? I would say yes. I can't. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to remember specifically being back at the ninth step, but
especially the first time.
Yeah,
it's like really, really tricky.
But I definitely think I know peace now.
I mean, if I had to guess, chances are by the time I'm finishing up step nine, there's probably some moments of peace in my life. I, you know. Looking back at it now, I got some judgments about what my life looked like. But at that time, I'm sure there had to be some peace. Like, I wasn't running around like a maniac at all times. That's for sure.
Well, and truthfully, for me, the real peace and serenity that I have, like, on a daily basis now, I attribute to the 11th step, like, my practice of meditation.
Right.
More so and my dependence on, I guess, a higher power. Mm-hmm. Like, my peace and serenity now comes way more from that. So... I can't say that I had it after I was done the ninth step, but I definitely had it after 11, you know.
The flavor of peace I have now. If peace or a spectrum. Peace is on a spectrum somewhere. Yeah, I got a lot more of it from meditation for sure, too. That's what I do at night now when I lay down and my thoughts aren't calm. I'm like, oh, let me just turn that timer on and start breathing because that's what's going to put me to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Comprehend serenity and no peace. All right, so number five, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. I feel like this is tied into number three about not regretting the past or wishing to close the door on it. Like,
yeah.
They kind of go hand in hand. When I see that my struggle can now be useful for someone else, now I don't regret it as much.
Right, yeah, I would tie that in with that the same way.
Do you feel... See, this is where it gets tricky, though, when they throw some shit in there, like, no matter how far down the scale we have gone. Basically, like, no matter how shitty the stuff you've done is, there's redemption for you. Or you know, you'll feel how those experiences can benefit others. Do you think that's true for everybody? Like, look, yeah, is it true for me? Sure. I'm a guy who stole from my parents, right? Did that suck? Was that awful? Absolutely. But when I look at the comparison of things I could have done, like murdered people or beat up old ladies or fucking raped people, like there's a whole lot more that I'm not so sure I would have been okay with later.
Yeah, but I guess that's part of, you know, the amends process is doing whatever you got to do to bring peace for that in your life, you know? Doing what you need to do to make that right and figuring out what that is. Yeah, so I would say if you're doing a perfect ninth step, which nobody does.
I don't know. Mine was pretty close.
You know, and you address these things and you really make amends. I mean, to me, that's the difference between just saying I'm sorry for shit and feeling bad about doing something and actually making an amends to try to make right a wrong we have harmed.
So, like, the idea being that the amends should be something that, like, if the amends itself did not make me feel okay with the situation, it wasn't the right amends.
Right.
Then like, I at need the to end of an amends,
continue or
I
do
should
something
feel all right.
Right.
Whether the other person does or not.
Correct.
Huh. Okay. So I think you make a fascinating and really strong point there, and I don't disagree with it. But I guess my holdup is anytime any of us, because this is what I spent my life doing, anytime any of us says that I know for sure even people who had it worse than me are capable of what I've found, I don't like that. Like, I don't know what the fuck people are capable of. I was capable of this. Maybe someone else is. I ain't promising nobody that.
So you're taking that from which, I guess I'm not so sure where that's coming from.
No matter how far down the scale we have gone.
Oh.
That's saying like, hey, you know, yeah, it was really bad for me and I found this thing. And no matter how much worse than me you were, you will also
find
that.
Okay, it's making it a comparative to somebody's suffering.
Yeah, you can't, like, I don't know. Maybe even people who had it not as bad as me or didn't go as far down the scale, to use this fucking antiquated language of the big book. Like,
I don't even know what that means exactly.
Maybe they can't experience, or maybe they don't see how their experiences will benefit others at the end. Like, I guess I just don't ever want to feel like I'm telling somebody else, because this works for me, I'm telling you, it'll definitely work for you too. And that's what that feels like as a promise.
That's true.
You know, that's kind of the problem I have with the way I was in 12 step. Really, it's just like, I did it this way. This is what I saw my friends do. And this is just how you fucking do it.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Voices of Hope, Inc., a nonprofit recovery organization made up of people in recovery, family members, and allies. Together, members strive to protect the dignity of those that use drugs and those in recovery by advocating for treatment, harm reduction and support resources, and mentoring. Please visit us at www.voicesofhopemaryland.org and consider donating to our cause.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and I guess I could see a more loose understanding of this being that no matter what you've done, there is some redemptive quality in your life or in your story, you know?
Which is going back to like kind of where I came into this with. Like, I like these as poetic concepts that do a good job of describing some of the things we might get from the program, some of the ways we might feel different than we used to. I think they're beautiful for that, but as actual strong concepts, I think they're just a bunch of fucking wishy-washy, like, this sounds nice.
So just maybe leaving them in the book in a paragraph to flow through is...
Or having the paragraph written or whatever, like, it's cool, but
to pick them out and highlight them is...
Right. You're not going to check these off.
And call them promises.
I'm not going home today like, I do see how all my experiences could benefit others. I'm going to check that one off. Like, that's not happening. Number six. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Does everybody that comes into a 12-step program, well, I guess in this case, does everybody that goes into AA, since this is only part of theirs, do they all feel useless and self-piteous when they go? Like, isn't that an assumption that we're all got that going on? I kind of think we do, but
yeah,
I'm just saying.
I agree. That's what gets you there, but it's the only reason you're walking into a room full of strangers and on fucking weeknight in a church basement asking them to be your friend.
I was a terrible person. Will you guys like me?
I mean, I can relate it to me. I think that was true. I had that experience. I don't know that I felt useless, but I definitely felt a lot of self-pity. I always felt like a person that had a lot of potential and just wasn't living up to my potential.
Oh, now I just want to do a podcast about that. About the acorn and the potential it has and all the fucking environmental ways that it doesn't live up to that. It's a great example that came out of that Gabor Mate book that I'm like in love with right now. Because it just makes so much sense and helps me understand how my environment actually is impacting my genetic potential and has in the course of my life. And anything that fucking reduces shame, man, I'm all in it. Right? Yeah. Fuck it. Let's go to it. The acorn. Okay. The acorn's got the potential to be a big, strong oak tree. What if it falls on a parking lot? It ain't going to be a big, strong oak tree. Right? What if a squirrel decides that's his winter food? It ain't going to be an oak tree. What if it grows in an area that's got nutrient deficient soil? It's not going to be as big as its potential. It might barely grow at all. What if it grows up around too many weeds or too many other trees or in too close proximity? It might not grow up to be as full and big as it could have been, right? What if somebody walks along when it's a young tree and like kicks it over? It might be damaged and grow sideways. Like, all these ways this acorn can be impacted from reaching this potential genetically that it originally had. And I think we overlook all of that in children and humans. And I mean, it just makes so much sense. It's not what your DNA said you were going to be. It's what your environment allowed to have happen. I don't know. I think it's beautiful. And lesson shame, always.
It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, did I feel useless and self-piteous? Abso-fucking-lutely. Did they disappear? Abso-fucking-lutely not. They lessened. They definitely lessened through the step process, but they didn't disappear.
Yeah, I don't know that they disappeared. There is something, again, beautiful about like this idea that of righting a wrong. You know what I mean? Of being a person that takes ownership and hopefully in this process, it's a reduction of someone's pain if they have it or an honoring of someone's pain and suffering. And so if nothing else, you're able to do that for a person to say, hey, I recognize your feelings matter. You're a valuable person in my life. I hurt you or did you wrong, and I want to honor that. So I believe there's some spirit of goodness that comes from that. But whether it reduces it to nothing, I can't say that it would disappear.
My argument of what you just said, or at least not my argument, because I don't disagree with what you said. My take on what you said about what's actually happening there is in the process of us going to make this amends, we are making connection and our body feels better after making that connection, because every disconnection we have with the world, right? The places we've done the harm where the disconnection happens, we feel that in our soul or in our mind body, so to speak. And so we go and we make this connection with this person that feels good and it makes our body feel better. And it allows us to, you know, live in a different way and feel differently towards ourselves. But that connection is happening because we're validating that person. We're going back at a place where we didn't validate them. They felt very invalidated for the hurt we did because we were supposed to love them. And now we're seeing it and we're saying, hey, I see you. I see that pain you went through that I caused and I'm really sorry. That's what creates the ability to connect, is the validation. And we were just talking about that. That's why I was like, oh my God, that's validation is everything. We just validate everybody. But yeah, so I mean, right there, if nothing else, I would have to take a hard stance that they are definitely not going to fucking disappear. Like, that's not going to happen overnight because you made an amends and these are false.
Right.
Sorry, AA. They're still pretty. Number 7. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Bullshit. I don't see that.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
Again, this is one of those things where I think it does happen to a degree, but we don't lose it.
No, it doesn't go away completely. At least it hasn't for me.
Yeah.
I've gotten better.
I don't actually believe in the word selfish.
Yeah.
To say something is selfish would mean that there would have to be an act that was unselfish. And I don't think there's a person in humanity right now that could convince me that that exists. I don't think people do unselfish things. if I say, oh my God, Billy's really upset with me, I should probably go like get him a card or a piece of chocolate and drop it off at his house, put in his mailbox for him. That's because of how I feel about you being upset with me. It's not because you're upset with me. It's always a selfish action. Everything is always about how I feel. When I go to help somebody else, it's because of how I feel helping someone else. It baffles me when people say that there's unselfish ways of being. I'm like, how? You're always looking out for the way you feel about what you're doing.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too tied up into that, but yeah.
I do, but not today.
Yeah, not today.
Maybe that's our next podcast.
Yeah, there we go. That'd be a good topic, selfishness.
Oh, is that a spiritual principle? Selflessness?
Selflessness.
Let's fucking do it next month. I want to have that argument. Yeah. That sounds great. Okay, so we'll pass on that for now. Number 8, self-seeking will slip away. I don't know how that's any different than number 7. What's the difference between selfish and self-seeking?
Yeah, I think they're the same. I mean, I don't see much difference either.
So not in this context. Like, if you presented them to me and said, selfish is when you think that way and self-seeking is when you act that way, I'd buy into that, but they sound the same when the way they're written.
Yeah.
Self-seeking will slip away. Did your self-seeking slip away after step 9, Billy?
No, it's still not gone, and I've done 2 step 9.
I lean into self-seeking.
Yeah.
I'm like, we just all need to do what's best for us. It's perfect.
Yeah, and I guess I would agree to some context that self-seeking isn't always bad. You know, it's not always wrong. It's, am I doing it in a way that causes harm to other people might cause me to take a little bit of pause, but, you know.
Right, right. Right, like if I'm trampling over people to get the gift I want at Black Friday, maybe that's not the right kind of self-seeking, but just saying, hey, I'd like to go see the museum in D.C. and driving down and walking through it is probably pretty nice. Yeah,
but it's like if I say, oh, I could go home and, you know, do some things around the house that might help the wife or kids, or I'm going to lay down and watch football all day and do nothing. I'm probably going to lay down and watch football later, you know.
Right, and I guess, not to get too far off, but in the argument of the world, they would say, oh, well, that's just you looking out for yourself. And in my understanding of the world, I would say, maybe that's exactly what your body needs to be a good parent tonight or tomorrow, or right, to be a good employee. Like, that rest is needed for you to be your optimal self at some other point. Like, we need that recharge. And so I don't think it's me doing the practices I need to do to keep up on my own spiritual condition, right? Me journaling, me meditating, me doing all these things. Somebody could say, man, those are really selfish. You take a lot of time away from your family to do those. Well, yeah, I do. And you know what? My family fucking benefits. And if I stop doing these, there's a problem.
Like, right.
So to me, it's like all those actions are just as selfless as any other action. Yes, I'm doing them for me, but that way I can be and show up in the world as the person I'm trying to treat other people the way they should be.
Right.
I don't know. Convoluted, I know. Yeah. It's off topic. You're like, God damn it, Jason, stick to the point. Number 9, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. That's a fucking big promise.
Yeah.
Your whole outlook? I mean, maybe most of it.
I mean, for me, mine did, because I will say I like came into the program full of like doom and gloom and life sucks and everything's about suffering and poor me and, you know. So
I'm sorry. I'm picturing Kim listening to this and being like, he was that way with 9 years. Right. I was pretty miserable still. Yeah. Still pretty felt like the world was out to get me. It was hard to shake.
Yeah.
It was a really hard feeling to shake. And it wasn't a feeling. It's something that my father gave me, man. Like, if you met my father and then you talked to me, you'd be like, duh, I know where that comes from. The whole apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Like, yeah, I felt like the world was not going to work out positively for me. And I did not shake that just because I worked the steps.
Well, maybe you weren't painstaking enough. I wasn't. Fucking
there it is. There it is. That's what every... I'm going to get 5 emails from people in AA that be like, the promises are fine. You just weren't painstaking, asshole. Right. I'm like, all right, maybe not.
Shallow bitch.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't painstaking enough. 10, fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. What I do like about the way they worded this is that they don't say economic insecurity will leave us. They say fear of it will.
Right.
Which,
so you might still be broke.
Yeah, yeah, you might be broke, but you won't be in that constant. And I think that, to me, that's more of what this one actually says, is that we're going to move away from fear and towards love. That's what I'm reading into that. But as it's written, fear of people and of economic insecurity, it's interesting that that's about step nine, I guess, because when you have to make financial amends, if you're like scared of, oh, if I pay back this credit card, I won't have enough.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like why that applied to nine, but I guess that, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess the avoidance of people, like that, if you were trying to avoid people or stay away from certain people, you had caused harm, or, you know, institutions you were staying away from. Like if you went and made your amends, you could have, you know, less fear about those things.
I'm going to preface this by saying maybe I'm overthinking this, which is a big statement coming from one of us. But I guess I'm thinking through that idea of like, if I thought I had good intentions in myself, and yet saw what I actually did action-wise in the world to damage people. Like when I'm looking at this in 8 and 9. And then I'm going to think, well, Jesus, if that's where I'm coming from, being what I consider a good intentioned person, and you know, the world has given me this belief that there's just these readily available good and evil people out here somewhere, I'm going to be scared of people, because if I'm capable of that, being a good person, I don't want to interact with anybody, because what the fuck are they going to do to me, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent? Maybe that's a stretch. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but like that's a feeling. And then as I make the amends and realize, oh, these repairs can be made, maybe I'm more open to, oh, well, maybe other people will care and, you know, not shit on me the way I did people.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't particularly hear that as fear of all people or fear of people in general. I was thinking of it more as individuals that I might be trying to avoid or stay away from. Like, I still have, like, crowd anxiety and, you know, going to, like, the airport and there's a million people around. Like, oh, people are going to try to rob me and, like, all that shit's still there.
Right.
That isn't went away.
Oh, man. So, see, now I'm going to have you reading that as just fear of people. Just every fucking people. That might apply more now. What's 11? We will, this is my favorite one. I'm not going to lie. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. This is what made me fall in love with The Promises, honestly. This line. I just love it. I felt like there was no better description of what the process that took place in my life going through the steps. This is one I completely agree with. I feel like, and not for every situation, but quite frequently I would come up to a situation where I was like, I have done this wrong every fucking time I've ever done it. And somehow I would just know the right way to proceed from my heart. And I was like, holy fuck, that is wild. So I love it. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still baffled most of the time. I guess that's not true. I do think I've learned enough skills and information and to trust, like, say, my heart or my instincts more to deal with situations.
I think this might even hold more true for me now than ever before in my life. I feel more able to show up. And even if I don't know exactly the thing that's needed, generally I can come from a place of not, kind of like the doctor's thing, do no harm. Like, I don't feel like I'm adding to the harm. I might not be able to fix whatever's going on for somebody, but generally I can show up in a way that's like not harming them and not putting extra on whatever they're already struggling with. Right. And that it does not feel like it was ever something that somebody sat down with me and said, hey, when these kind of situations, you do these. It just, it kind of became apparent at some point. It was like, oh, you just do this. And people seem to like that.
Yeah.
It's right. Like, oh, cool. Right. So I don't know. I really do like that one. I'm trying to think of where I could see how it would hold true in a more general sense for maybe somebody that doesn't read it and like buy right in to that happened.
Yeah, well, it's the intuitive part that gets me. Like, I guess I don't feel like a lot of times it's still intuitive. It is more of an awareness, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I can do something different this time. Like, it's more that than it is just like spontaneously doing the right thing. And we talk about that. I can't remember exactly which pamphlet. I think it's the Triangle of Self-Obsession, but it talks about, you know, being in life and then spontaneously acting in a position of love or whatever. And it's like, I don't know if I'm ever quite there. Although sometimes I can be like, oh, wait a minute. What I want to do is probably not best. Let's try this other thing and see what happens. I guess I would equate this more to that. It's like I've learned some things now to practice in situations where I'm like, all right, here's a situation where I got a lot of fear and I want to react in a way that, you know, might be hurtful towards others. Maybe I can try a little acceptance and just try to be compassionate or some humility and say, hey, I don't know what the right thing to do is.
Oh, I do that
right here, you know, but I don't know that it just, like, I hear intuitive and think like, oh, it just happens. Like, situation comes up, I just act and it just happens naturally.
Okay. Okay. So I'm picturing that situation you just walked me through. And I'm putting myself in it, and I'm thinking, okay, something happens, the thing hurts me and offends me, and my fear response kicks up. As long as I'm able to notice that, that's where I need the awareness, I guess, before the intuitive part happens. If I can catch that, right now for me, the process is, okay, the first thing is, what's going on for me? Well, I'm scared, right? This situation has created a fear of hurt or of going through a feeling I don't want to experience. So the first thing I do is I turn towards like my inner child, right? And I'm going to send a message about that fear. Oh my God, it is so hard to feel this much fear. Like, it is really hard for you. I'm so sorry. And then probably I'm going to, if I know more about why that situation causes fear, like the historical portion of it from my childhood or something, I might send messages around that to my inner child. But mostly the first part of how difficult it is, and then the last piece of I'm gonna be here with you, which I know sounds crazy when you're talking to yourself, right? But the idea is to take on the role of this better parent that we wish we would have had, and it's saying like, hey, I get that you're scared, but I'm gonna be here with you in that. You don't have to be alone anymore. Generally, once I have addressed the fear portion of it through a method of like that, or sitting with my breath, or whatever it is that I need to do, generally the intuitive part happens next. It's okay. Like, okay, what's the loving piece can come out once I've addressed the fear. Yeah. And then it's like, well, you know, you want to show up and go pick them up or go do whatever it is they said they needed. So I guess the intuitive part comes after I work around the fear portion of it.
Yeah. And I would say that, I mean, that sounds to me like being an intellectual guy is like, that's learning to live your principles. You know what I mean? You're learning to practice your principles once you can get out of the fear state, out of that.
Gotta emotion. Get that nervous system to calm down first. Right. That's the tricky part.
Then you can live by your principles.
Right. And I think that's the holdup that most of our society gets to. Like, yep. I think a lot of us recognize, oh, I don't want to be this guy that yells at my wife or that says these nasty things, or I don't want to be this woman that says these nasty things to my husband or my kids. But when the moment comes and that triggered nervous system happens, we don't have the ability to do anything different from there. And it's like, once we can understand that, then we have a template for something else. But until then, you're going to be the person that just keeps saying, why can't I do something different in this situation?
Right.
And keep running into it.
Yeah. And for me, that's been, like, I guess, meditation's been a big part of that, you know.
Meditation is
being
a big
able
part
to, like,
that.
Take a pause, take a breath, take a second before I just react to whatever the feeling is.
Well, and if you think about that, right, in meditation, what you're doing is a form of breathing that is like some, even if it's just letting your body do its regular form of breathing, that's good. Like, that's
right.
That's what your body needs. And in a survival response, that's not what your body's going to be doing. So even just taking 5 minutes to breathe in any fashion is going to change your physiology. It's going to calm your body. I mean, and yeah, meditation will be one of those things that works. Right. And that's great. Like, I guess I said that because I don't want you to think like, oh, I only get that from meditate. Like, no, that's perfect. That's a great coping skill in those moments. Calm it down, right? Number 12, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Oh, is this where you think it's bullshit?
I mean, that depends on your version of God. You know, I've developed an understanding of a higher power in my life that I could say that that's probably true. I could probably break down most people's understanding of their God and point out to them how it's not true.
Jesus.
That's fucking arrogant to say, but you know, no, I, you know, my understanding of how my higher power works in my life now is that's pretty true. I don't, wouldn't again say that I necessarily had that as a result of the ninth step. That didn't come till much, much later. For sure, I'm, you know, pretty sure on that one, but I definitely am at a point now where I realize there's a power working in my life that's greater than me, that, you know, if I can just kind of sit back and roll with it, you know, things are better than me trying to do it on my own.
Right. I mean, I don't, for people who don't believe in God, it's kind of hard to give them this one as a promise.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if we're loose in our interpretation of the G-O-D word with a capital G in this case, I think that it could be amended, maybe, to be said better.
Right.
Like, we will suddenly realize that we're not alone in the world, and there's a lot of help from our community if we look for it.
Right.
Or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, there's something a little more realistic we could probably be promising here.
Right.
But this isn't my program, so fuck.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's your take on them after, I don't know that either of us have gone through them so thoroughly before, to like really examine if they're real or not?
Well, so there is a little bit of a paragraph after that I want to read, just because I think it's kind of an out for most of this. Before we get into my take on it, it says, "Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them." So that's like a disclaimer saying, like, yeah, if I work towards these goals, you know, I can get them. You know, that's true for a lot of things. Like, you know, if I want to be 300 pounds and I work towards that, I can probably get there. You know.
I would say yes, and then still somewhat not. Like some of these are promising things that are just... Okay, so I'll say this. I don't know, for people who have been raised in an environment where they grow up and they end up feeling useless and self-piteous about themselves, right? Like, I don't know that we ever have that completely disappear.
Right.
Is the word completely in the promises? No. But it says disappear. To me, that means not here at all.
Right.
I don't know that that ever happens for us, honestly. So that's going to be a hard point. But I didn't get everything they're talking about, especially not to the amount that I have been able to get it from the steps. And so it's like, I'm rationalizing, like, in my head, I'm trying to argue, one, are these even possible? But then two, are these possible with just step work? And I'm like, I don't. They seem a little lofty.
Yeah, and here they're talking about it's a result of the ninth step, you know.
Alone,
so,
right?
Yeah.
That's some heavy lifting for one step.
Well, yeah. I mean, it seems, yes, they seem extravagant to me. I mean, maybe I'm in the wrong fellowship. Like, maybe I need to go to AA, and if I had worked them that way, I'd get different results. I don't know. I can't say. But
that's a fair point.
I didn't have that experience in my recovery. There's still some of those I know that I struggle with. Probably not on a daily basis. Like, say, definitely a lot of them have gotten way better. And, you know, a lot of my feelings of my uselessness and worthlessness and all that, you know, have gotten better. But I still have days and times where I feel those things. I still have days and times where I feel selfish or self-serving or whatever you want to call it. You know, I don't usually act on them most of the time. You know?
Right.
Has my life gotten way better and I've become financially stable, or financial insecurities have left?
My financial situation has changed more than my financial security situation.
Yeah.
And my financial situation and my financial security situation have both changed way differently than my fear of economic insecurity.
Yeah, I don't have a fear of economic insecurity at the moment, but that's because my financial security has changed. Like,
have you ever had a weird relationship with money?
Always.
What is the weird relationship? Describe it.
So I'm a terrible money manager.
That's a critical statement.
Yeah.
I have not,
be more yet specific,
found it compelling to be more interested in my financial situation. Right?
So, well,
I'm trying to restate what you said with some different words.
Yeah. And I would say I have not been able to successfully manage my money in a way that causes me to feel secure.
Yes. But and maybe I'm wrong about this. I could be just assuming some things. From the way you've described it to me, you have never felt an interest in doing anything to necessarily not change the behavior, but not really to change your relationship with your financial stuff. Like, I don't know that, like, I think your solution for I spend money too quickly on things that I probably didn't need was to give Jen the money.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't actually like, oh, I feel really interested in, like, getting more familiar with my financial picture and when I can spend money.
Oh, no, I don't want to care about money. That's
right. So to me, there's something around that, right? And I'm trying to, I'm like taking a lot of guesses here. I'm sorry. Are you upset that I'm like,
oh, no.
I came from a situation where we had one income and it was never enough and we were always in debt and always behind and just trying to get by. And I heard the adult conversations around the money we didn't have to do all these different things that we talked about possibly doing. And I have a hoarding, stockpiling problem with money. And here's the way it manifests. So I will get an allowance. It's like $250 a month. And I can do that whenever I want with that, right? I don't do anything. And I will take all the 20s out of that 250 at the end of the month when I get my next allowance, and I'll just put them in a little, you know, place where I stash my money, and I just keep doing that. It does not make me happier to have that money. It just makes me less fearful. Huh. And it doesn't make me happier to spend the money. So I've got this weird dynamic where it's like I have this allowance, and I really honestly half the time don't know what the fuck to do with it because I'm like, I'd feel weird spending money, but I also know that just stockpiling it is literally doing nothing for my enjoyment of life. And I know that I would probably enjoy life more if I freely spent it more. And it's like this weird dynamic. And I'm so I picture it coming from all these messages of like, we don't have enough. We're not going to be able to keep up. And so now it's like, oh, I gotta store. I got to stockpile. And I'm picturing for you, I was like, well, he came from a situation where his family owned a business. They were probably a little weller off. And I'm wondering if your body's reaction that says, brain, make up a reason why we don't want to care about money, right? I wonder if it's some reaction to like, maybe that's how your parents showed you love was through financial means. And yet you were resentful about that because you weren't getting like the nurturing hugs that you talk about not existing in your house. And so now there's like this kind of like shitty view of money. Like, that's that thing they tried to like bribe me with when I really wanted something else.
That could be. I've never really thought much about it. Yeah, like that. So I'd have to look that. But
I guess before you say it, the main point of what I got was that you were a guy who likes to solve problems, Billy. You like to think through shit and come up with neat solutions for stuff, and you like spreadsheets and shit. Like we're dorky like that, right? Like we love that shit. So the fact that you have never felt like this automatic instant desire to want to fix the money thing for yourself or do some cool things around it tells me, oh, there's something in his body that instantly like shuts off any interest in learning more about money stuff.
Well, my immediate response to that would be, yes, I like nice things and like having a lot of stuff. And if I were to be financially responsible, I would have to deny myself a lot of things that I want. So it's easier to either not have to care about it or not have to look at it because, like, I say to Jen all the time, like, I'm like, I would probably eat out almost every day. I would almost never cook at home because it fucking sucks. The whole process of cooking, the whole process of cleaning it up, all that shit sucks. I'd rather just go to a restaurant, have somebody make my food, and then fucking leave, you know, but it's expensive. And so it's, you know, it becomes a financial burden. So that to me is more where I think at a lot of times in my life, I felt an inability to change that circumstance or an unwillingness to change that. Like, well, I don't want to work anymore. I don't want to get a fucking second job or whatever so that I can go eat out every day or.
Yeah, but and it's interesting you say like inability or unwillingness, but like I don't know, to me, and this is one of those situations, maybe this is what I'm trying to do more of us, like find where there is a reason that makes sense.
Right?
Because I believe there always is. And maybe the thing with the money is that you grew up with nicer things and now you kind of feel like you want them and just aren't in a financial place to afford them and it hurts and so you don't want to look at it.
Yeah, well, and there's been so in my nerdy solving problems ways, like I've spent tons of time researching and reading about, you know, how to get out of credit debt and how to do all these things. I'm like, ugh, but that means I have to change a lot of what I'm doing now. I don't want to what I'm doing now.
Which would suck if you also weren't at the same time adjusting the feelings towards the money to begin with, right? Like, that's where I think it gets interesting, really, is to think, okay, so maybe because you were able to avoid the pain of not getting the nurturing as a youth, maybe the place you went to escape that was these places with money. Maybe it was in like a fancy toy your parents had bought, or something, other experience they had provided that cost money, like a baseball camp or something. Like, maybe your escapes were through these financial means. And so when you're feeling stressful in life and your body's saying, hey, we know how to fix this, we go buy nice shit that we like to play with, right? We buy toys and stuff. And the financial situation not calling for you to be able to use that coping skill is like the resentful part of, well, I don't want to fucking change, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I guess in my upbringing wise, and again, without ever thinking too deeply about it, I've just always thought like my inability to manage money had to do with being brought up in a household where money didn't matter that much. So it wasn't really a thing that we discussed, and we didn't get like everything we wanted as kids or anything. Right. It just wasn't ever an issue. So now I just live my life like, oh, money should never be an issue, even though sometimes it is, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, wait a minute, it should be an issue.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't really practiced that skill much.
It's fascinating. I really wonder what the experience for everybody would be like if they took a week and they walked through the world and they just assumed by default that nothing they did was their fault. Like, if we just went through a whole week and it was never like, oh, I'm just too lazy, or oh, I'm just too unwilling, or oh, I'm just too this, and that's why all these things don't happen. If we stop making ourselves the excuse for why none of these things happen in our life, what other kind of reasons could we come up with? And I just think that would be like a great starting point for us all. Like, what if I actually don't have control over this? What other kind of shit could be making this happen? Because I think the more curious we become, the less shame we have, and the more interested we get in trying to be different. And that's what it is. I think the frustration of I'm trying to be different and I keep finding myself being the same person makes me not want to give a fuck anymore. It's like I keep failing at it. And if I just come at it like, I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to act like I can't do anything different than what I'm doing and then try to understand myself from there. I don't know. It just seems like a better place to start.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've done that in a roundabout way. I just dig up why our society's all fucked up around money and how it's a big weird construct of to keep us all enslaved.
It's just energy, Billy. So that's it ain't what my Bruce fault. Said.
Yeah, right. It's just energy. Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess, you know, go out there. Of course, increase your compassion levels, increase your kindness and gentleness levels to yourself. And I don't know. Let us know. What do you think about these promises? Are these like legit factual things that are going to happen to us? Or is this just a really beautiful way to write up, you know, what this process or the experience of the 12-step process can be like when it goes well? Let us know and intuitively go out there and handle those situations that used to baffle you. Have a good week. Did you like this episode? Share it with people you think might get something out of it. Check out the rest of our episodes at recoverysortof.com. Also, while you're there, you can find ways to link up with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, YouTube, anything. We're always looking for new ideas. Got an idea you want us to look into? Reach out to us.